This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Joining us in the studio is football historian Ian Sisson. Ian, it's great to have you back with us again.
Yes, I'm starting to do this quite often, aren't I?
Yeah, it's great. Are you enjoying it?
Yes, I do. I like coming in. It's a great place.
Anzac Day is tomorrow, and we know it marks the landing of Australian and New Zealand forces in Gallipoli. It's also evolved to a day where we recognise and acknowledge and appreciate the services and sacrifices of all Australians who served in the war. But bringing it back into the context of football, we have a little bit of a dilemma.
We do. We have a massive dilemma because we need to work out our own place in relation to the whole Anzac story. And a lot of my work has been about trying to establish the extent to which soccer was a, or association football was a game that was heavily involved in the in recruitment, enlistment and service in the armed forces, and also, you know, deaths in service of soccer players. And I have, I think, to my satisfaction at least, established that soccer was indeed a very big part of the AIF in the First World War. Now, having established that, what do we do then? Do we say, hey, let us play too. Let us be part of Anzac Day commemorations. What do we do? And it's a dilemma for me, because I think if we try too hard, if we're strenuous in our attempts to be part of it, we'll look like we're coming off as slightly exploitative, not respecting the tradition. So what do we do as a game? And it's a difficult one. I mean, what do you think?
It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Because we've seen in a lot of other codes in the game, particularly AFL, they've built that up to be a traditional Anzac Day clash, Essendon against Collingwood.
Yeah.
Whereas in the A-League, we don't really have that.
No.
Are we trying to create that kind of identity? Should we be able to create that identity? Should any sporting code in the country be able to play on Anzac Day? Or should we completely leave it as a day of reflection and remembrance?
Well, yes, it is a difficult one. I mean, my personal opinion is that it's gone too far. I've been published in the newspaper, in The Age, as having said that the way Anzac sport is played out doesn't actually respect properly what Anzac Day could be or should be. And again, that's a really hard, you know, thing to work out. What should Anzac Day be? But I don't think the way it's celebrated in both the NRL and the ARL, sorry, the AFL, I don't think it's done quite properly. But, you know, there'll be other people who have very different opinions from mine. But I think that it's, I mean, I'd be happy just to turn the lights off and ask everyone to go home in terms of Anzac. But that's not the reality. The reality is we have a competitive sports marketplace where every sport is trying to obtain the best advantage and leverage, to use that phrase, that term, leverage events, moments for their own benefit. And, you know, AFL have actually done that. They've leveraged Anzac Day to turn it into a massive event. And what do we do? Do we just sit there and go, okay, that's theirs. They can do this, and we'll just sit on the sidelines and be respectful? Or do we do something similar? I mean, I think that... Again, you know, I think the listeners are about to hear the uncertainty, indecisiveness in my position. But I think that if we could actually find the ashes, you know, just to remind everybody, we're looking for the soccer ashes. If we could find the ashes and have a game against New Zealand on Anzac Day, then all of the terms of Anzac Day, of Anzac, would be brought together. And it would be, you know, it wouldn't be for massive publicity or massive gain for the local league. It would just be a respectful acknowledgement that our game was at Gallipoli, our game was part of the armed forces, and soccer players were killed during the war, and we need to remember those people as well.
And it'd be symbolic of that.
Yeah.
If we did reignite that tradition.
Yeah, that's right. So
it's only fitting.
Yeah, it would be fitting, and it wouldn't be part of the expansionist aims of any league. It would be just part of what we do as a nation and what we've done for, you know, what we used to do for many, many decades as a nation, which was play New Zealand regularly. But, you know, again, you know, David Gallop last week suggested, you could hear the way he was talking, he suggested that was going to be very difficult given our international commitments, you know, with other teams, with other nations.
I think that's very interesting because we talk about Anzac Day games being almost here in Australia. There actually is a game tomorrow, and it's almost like there's been not that same build or marketing and advertising about Brisbane Roar versus Adelaide on Anzac Day. It's just almost been advertised as another game in particular. It's when you compare that to the advertising, what you see for the AFL and the NRL, I know you were saying that, like, you see stuff about Anzac Day Eve now and almost taking that leverage at the AFL have sort of looked to use that. And there was no such thing as Anzac Day Eve, before 3 or 4 years ago. And now all of a sudden it's a marquee game the AFL have sort of utilised in that way. It's baffling in a way, very strange.
What do you do on Anzac Day Eve? What do we do traditionally? I know what we do on Christmas Eve. You know, we kind of...
It's just another day, isn't
it? We get nervous children off to bed and that sort of stuff, excited children off to bed. And, you know, there's a sort of pattern of in our, those of us who follow Christmas, there's a pattern in our lives. But what do we do Anzac Eve? is it a thing?
It's really just another day.
Yeah. But, you know, now we know that the AFL has Melbourne, Richmond, Anzac Eve.
It's weird, isn't it? I don't... Now thinking about it, I don't think we should play anything on Anzac Day.
Well, it's not a bad argument.
Like, why are we actually playing on Anzac Day?
In any sport.
Yeah. I think that the
Why do we need to play... Let's be realistic. The A-League does not need to play tomorrow.
No, well, it's a Thursday.
We never play on a Thursday. The last time we played on a Thursday...
We played Thursday night last week.
And
but that was,
just about to explain why, because Sydney FC have the extra fixture with the Asian Champions League. So they had to then go off to China to play against their opposition in the Asian Champions League. But that's the only reason why we did play on a Thursday. But so there's actually no reason why the A-League should be playing on a Thursday, just for the sake of it. Is probably not good enough.
But does that change at all? I'd love to get your points on this as well, your opinions on this. If, say, that it fell on a Saturday, which it will, I believe, next year, I think that it does take that, obviously, because of the leap year. Yeah. Do games, do you think, should still go ahead? Because obviously Saturday, Sunday, Friday are the traditional time slots, or for most codes, the AFL, NRL and A-League will more than likely fall on that weekend. Do you think that changes anything, or in terms of it not being during the week?
Well, I don't think it should change anything. I think you should play if it falls, if Anzac Day falls on a Saturday or a Sunday, you should just play the fixtures as you've planned. It's going to be interesting to see what the AFL do. Do they stop everybody else playing if it's a Saturday?
I know that a few years ago when it fell, they used to play 2 or 3 games on the one day, and it was almost, they had the game they played in New Zealand for 2 years as well to sort of broaden that Australia-New Zealand part of Anzac, but that was sort of fell flat after about 2 years. So it is an interesting dilemma what they will do, because that's usually 5 games in one day.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of what you've previously suggested and what we've already spoken about on FNR is reigniting the Australian v New Zealand clash and competing for the Ashes, because that to me makes more sense than having an A-League game on Anzac Day. Yeah. Okay, David Gallop did mention that it might be hard to organise that, but I think with appropriate planning, even if it's not our Socceroos and Matildas, it could still be our youth national teams.
Yeah.
There's no reason why that can't be organised.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that people are going to say, well, what's the angle here? What's our market penetration with this? They're going to all those sorts of questions, and the answer is, well, not much. We're not going to have much market penetration. We're just going to have the game celebrate internally.
Bring back history that once was.
Yeah, and
surely that's good enough.
That's good enough for me, but is it good enough for the practical numbers people? You know, the people who say, well, you know, why aren't we leveraging? And I think that's the problem, and that's the dilemma that we raise when we try to talk about what should soccer do on Anzac Day, and that's the how much does the hard headed business kind of thinking have to do with what we do?
Mm. Yeah. And I was reading some of your book.
Oh, terrific! What's it called? The game that never happened.
The game that never happened. Where can people buy this?
They can buy it from the publisher. And they can also get it at Readings Bookshop in Carlton.
Okay.
As well, yeah.
There you go. Go and pick it up.
Yep.
And in there you wrote, I'll quote this, a team mostly of Victorian soldiers playing soccer and beating a team of English soldiers in France during the First World War must surely be a rarity. Sporting contests between Australian troops and their allies blossomed in all theatres of war for purposes of morale, fitness and recreation.
Yeah. So the thing about soccer in the armed forces is that there's two things to think about. One is that soccer wasn't as marginal as people imagine. It was quite a popular game pre-war, and a lot of the soldiers were soccer players. But also, when they wanted to play games of sport against against allies, who was the most? Where were most of the allies from? They were from England. And what did most of the English soldiers want to play? Soccer.
Mm.
And Australians put their hands up and said, "Okay, we'll play this game. We'll have a go." And so a lot of men who hadn't played the game before got involved in these competitions. And so there were soccer games being played all over France, all over England, and involving Australians, and it's like, and some of these people were shifted. Some of these people, I need to do more research on this, but I've seen cases where men who'd never played the game before played in the armed forces and came back to Australia and took up the game. So, it was a big deal in the armed forces during the war, and there's plenty of diaries that reveal the extent to which soccer was being played. Often a diary will talk about, it'll be an officer's diary, talk about a week's events, and they will list what happened. They did, they did this march, they went here, they went there, they played a game of Australian rules, they played a game of rugby, and they played a game of soccer. And it was almost like each game had its own place. None was more important than the other. And I think that's what we need to emphasise when we talk about the history of sport in the Australian Armed Forces. Soccer wasn't the dominant game, but it certainly wasn't the minority game either. It was just a part of the whole fabric of the Australian Armed Forces.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable when you think about it, and obviously it really does say it in the title, like the game that never happened, because it is never mentioned.
Yeah,
we have something that brings it to light and allow for the broader football community to know that it was there in an important time in not just Australian history but world history as well.
Yeah, obviously I don't mean soccer never happened. Soccer did, and as I've said a number of times, not only did it happened probably more often than most other codes of football.
Mm.
But it doesn't happen in terms of memory. It doesn't happen in terms of mythology, in terms of legend. Who are the great? What are the great soccer legends from before World War II?
While you were compiling this book, what story in particular sticks out in your mind from World War One or World War Two?
Well, I mean, the one that I've been focused on lately is the Irimpel story, which is the one, the team in Mildura, that was basically the starting point of my research, where I found this tiny team in a tiny town that lost all those players. But there are other teams. There are other teams that lost lots of players. There's a team in Melbourne, the Thistle team. They lost eight. Eight of their members were killed in the war. The Caledonians in Perth lost eight. And it's like, it's just astounding. You see these lists compiled in the newspapers of soccer teams and the number of players they sent and the number of players who were killed. It's just, it makes you wonder how the game could even restart. Lost so many good players, and a lot of the players that went were injured, were wounded, and came back, shadows of their former selves, and they weren't able to play to any extent the way they used to be able to.
How did the game move on from there?
Well, it started off slowly, lots of enthusiasm because because sport was seen as a way to normalise society quickly. So everybody got back into sport. The government was kind of encouraging this kind of behaviour. And everybody got right into it. And soccer developed because we needed more people. And so more migrants came. Waves of migrants came in the early 20s. And by the mid-20s, soccer's become a really dominant force again around Australia. And then the fateful year of 1927 happened, which basically the game shot itself in the foot. But that's a kind of another story.
Yeah, it's quite unbelievable, obviously, as you said, shot itself in the foot. Do you think 1920s, you think league would come into it, something that obviously broadened, and then obviously took so long after that until we actually saw some sort of Australian soccer league or Australian cup, I believe it was, around the 50s.
It's in 1927, remarkable things were happening. Clubs were leaving soccer and going to rugby league up north. They stopped playing soccer and started playing rugby league. Wallsend did that. A team in Ipswich did that. And you know, the game was very strong in those mining communities. And for internal politics reasons, people were saying, "I've had enough of this. We're going to a different code." And you know, that's also has an interesting aspect to it because it makes you think. Well, hang on, aren't they very different games? But I think it makes you reflect on how different and perhaps how harder soccer was as a game. Back in those days, and how it was, you know, it was closer to rugby in terms of the physical contact and so on. But that's another story as well.
Exactly, you know, because I guess obviously the same day they're all still somewhat in the same family, but that is interesting, like obviously the contact differences and everything else, like making that jump, like because it's very rare that we even see it now where players would make the jump, like from soccer in particular. You see it from rugby to AFL, but very rare to see soccer to rugby, rugby to soccer now.
You do actually. I mean, I grew up in Queensland, so I did actually see a lot of people move from soccer to rugby league, kids. And one of the stories that I talk about is often Aboriginal kids that I played with were fabulous players, and there was a certain sort of cultural expectation that they moved to rugby league as they got into their teens, and also the money that they were being offered, even at very local club levels. So there actually is movement between the codes. I don't know if you know of Andrew Johns, who was a rugby league player.
Yeah.
He was a very good soccer player when he was a kid, and he had to make a choice. Preston Campbell, an Indigenous rugby league player, he also played soccer and loved it.
I believe Brad Green was on trial at Manchester United as well.
And he was offered a gig at Walsall and he knocked it back. Adam Goods was a great soccer player.
Mm.
And he shifted as well. So there actually is a lot of movement from soccer to the other codes. There's not so much movement the other way, I think, because I think, as we know, soccer is a game that requires those 10,000 hours of ridiculous repetitions of passing the ball with the side of the foot and trapping and controlling hard kicks with your feet, and it doesn't have the requirements of other codes, but it's very hard to shift to from something like Australian rules to soccer. And another part of the book where I write the epilogue, where I talk about that game where Jack Dyer, the Richmond coach, bagged the soccer players in the 60s, and so basically they challenged him to a game, and the Slavia team demolished a team of AFL players, of VFL players at the time. But again, that's another story. Read the book.
That's exactly right. Go and buy it now. And Ian, before we wrap up, what is a lasting thought or maybe a comment that you'd like people to know about? Or even it could be something that you would do differently on Anzac Day.
I won't do anything differently on Anzac Day, I guess.
In terms of the sporting code as a whole, football, what would you like to see happen around this time of the year?
Well, like I said, not a lot, but I would like people to reflect. However they reflect on Anzac Day, everybody is different in the attitude they have towards it. But I would actually ask people to just have a little think about, you know, where are the soccer stories in relation to Anzac, and why don't we know any? when, you know, so many soccer players were on the first landing, so many soccer players died in the first week. Why don't we know that? And I think if you start to answer that question for yourself, you start to unpick a very big history, a very important history.
Fascinating. Yeah. And finally, how's the search going for the Ashes?
Oh, well, it's I'm interviewing, I'm doing phone interviews with people who might know, and we're struggling, but I'm going to keep at it, and we hopefully we'll get some leads soon. We've got some leads, but we hope to get some strong leads soon.
Well, Ian, thank you so much for joining us in the studio and on Evenings on FNR. We're going to take a quick break, but plenty more still to come.